Roberts Robinson Chevrolet Buick GMC presents Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. Shop, click, drive at robertsrobinson.com.
As I mentioned once last week, the month of September marks the beginning of year three of Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. We have two full years of podcasting in the books. And we'll have a big announcement this week and another announcement next week on some things that we're doing. And it goes without saying that I thank you so very much for listening to the podcast, for sharing it with your friends and family, for supporting the sponsors, and for the sponsors making it possible. We have turned this into a small business, a mom-and-pop business. It's just me and Jessica. Some days, my little dog Cabo is in here with me as we do the podcast and enjoy that immensely. And I never in a million years would have dreamed it would have been this successful, that we'd have 22,000 daily followers. We're getting close to, before the end of the year, we'll have 3 million total downloads or listens. Download is a podcast word for listens. It's just been remarkable, and I thank you very much. So we'll have more on that for you next week and for what we call in our house the family, the podcast family, because it really is. It's people who listen. It's sponsors. It's those who contribute and help. It's the guests that we have on. There's just so many people to thank and to talk about. We'll do a little bit more of that next week with a different announcement, an announcement of a different kind. This one is just a fun announcement for everyone. We've in the past done several patron parties and things for the patrons. We have not done too many public appearances or public events with all of the listeners of KKHI because COVID has been hanging over this thing. Places were closed. We know that many of you don't want to wear masks, and we had all these things going on. We feel like we're in the clear now, and a couple of really nice people that we work with that are supporters of the podcast that work in a business sort of way. They work in advertising and have been very helpful with the podcast. Chris Benson and Trevor Gorham came to me with the idea. They love playing cornhole. And the first thing I heard, I thought, well, I heard Chris talking about this. I'm like, yeah. And he convinced me that everybody can play cornhole and everybody loves to play cornhole. And some people are good at it and like to go to tournaments. And some people just like to do it while tailgating at Arrowhead. It doesn't really matter. It's a football tradition. It's a football season tradition. And they did the legwork on this and said, we've got an event space and a wonderful idea. Invite all the listeners to come out, and we'll have a pretty simple one-evening cornhole tournament, regardless of skill level, and we'll do it for charity. And so that's what we've decided to do, and we're inviting everyone that listens to the podcast to come compete in combat cornhole. That's right. We're calling it combat cornhole because it will cost $10 per player to play, and what we're going to have is two-person teams. So it's $20 to play. That's it. You come out, and it's going to be on October 6th at the Sandbox Power Play on Berry Road in the Northland. The Broncos play the Colts that night, so we'll have some football. I believe it'll be on Amazon, so we got to double-check with them and make sure it's going to be on, but I'm pretty sure we'll have football on to watch, and it's a really neat indoor-outdoor space. Should be a beautiful long-sleeve shirt or hoodie kind of evening, October 6th. What is that, about 3 weeks away? At Sandbox Power Play in the Northland. We're looking for 32 teams of two players if we can get them. Now, we need 64 people to say they're going to play. And it's, again, it's $24 per team, or $20 per team, 32 teams. And this is very simple. All you have to do is send me an email and say you're coming and playing, and I'll write your name down. You don't have to tell me who you're playing with, just your name, and say one team, or if you know a bunch of people that play cornhole, and you're like, we're going to have four teams that night, that's fine. I'll put your name on the bracket. We're going to build a bracket just like March Madness. It's going to be one and done. We're going to play cornhole, and you're going to be eliminated as we go here. We're going to play for real prizes and a real charity. The grand prizes, the winning team, will each receive beer fridges for their garage. That is a cool cornhole prize. If you win this thing that night, you win a beer fridge for your garage, courtesy of Cross Kitchens. They're providing those. We're going to have foursomes of golf, restaurant certificates, all kinds of prizes we'll give out for the best teams. As we get to the Elite Eight or Final Four, we'll take a look at what the prize list looks like. But you can win some really cool stuff. And we're raising money for friendsinserviceofheroes.org. It's called FISH, Friends in Service Heroes, FISH, friendsinserviceofheroes.org. And this is a low price. It's $10 to get in. It goes straight to the charity. You show up that night. You don't pay anything in advance. You show up that night and give your money to the charity, and we're good to go. I don't think we're going to break the bank here and raising a lot of money for this charity, but these are good people that do great work, obviously, friendsinserviceofheroes.org. And all you have to do, if you want to play, October 6th, it's a Thursday evening, we're going to open the event about 4, but the cornhole is probably going to start about 5. If you can't make it until after that, we'll make you one of the later matches. We will literally just start the first round matches as people arrive and do them in order. So we know that not everybody can be there at 4 or 5 o'clock. We get that. We think the event will be over by 7:30 or 8, or at least we'll be down to the final 4 by 7 o'clock or so. They have several, I think like 10 cornhole stations at the Sandbox. It's a cool place. It's beach volleyball. There's going to be cool young people there having fun. Let's go do it. Let's go have a good time. Even if you don't play. Look, anybody can play cornhole. You have no excuse to not do this. It's $10 per person, and it goes straight to the charity. I mean, every nickel goes straight to the charity. So we hope you'll play combat cornhole with us. I think we're going to make up some T-shirts that we'll have that night. We may give a couple away to the best teams or something, or the first teams out. I think if we make enough of them, we may sell them for charity as well. They could be pretty cool. So we're looking for 32 teams, which is 64 players. And that'd be great. That'd raise some money for the charity. And if you want to just show up and donate to the charity, we'll take that as well. This is a big, fun thing for all the listeners of KKHI. It's our way of saying thank you. They have food and drink and all that good stuff at Sandbox as well. But let's all get together and let's have some fun. All right, the masks are off. COVID is over. It's Thursday night football. It's the stinking Broncos. Let's go make fun of them together. Or maybe you're a Bronco fan, and by then they'll be 2-1 or 3-1 or something like that, and you'll brag it up. Whatever it may be, it doesn't really matter. Let's have a good time on a Thursday afternoon evening. I'll be there around 4 o'clock that day. I learned a long time ago, some people can skip out of work during the day and swing by an event, but they got to go home for dinner. And some people can't get out until after work is over. So we always start these things around like 4 to 8, knowing that we can get both types of professional individuals. But please join me by sending me an email. That's it. If you're going to play, just say, hey, my name is Steve, and I need 3 teams. And it's first come, first serve. Once 32 emails come in, or requests for 32 teams come in, we're trusting that you're going to show, and you're going to be there and play and pay. And if you don't, I'm going to call you out on the podcast. If you don't show, I'm going to call you out. So when you reserve your spot, you're in. And first emails in for 32 teams are on the bracket. For Combat Cornhole, for friendsinserviceofheroes.org, the email address is kevin@kkhasissues.com. Just shoot me an email and say you're in and how many teams you want. Now, don't tell me you want 10 teams. We're not going to do that. But if you want 2 or 3 teams, we'll allow that. That's fine. First come, first serve. Shoot me an email. Say you want a team in Combat Cornhole, October 6th at Sandbox in the Northland, 509 Northwest Berry Road. Again, it's $20 per team. That's $10 per person. It goes to friendsinserviceofheroes.org. All you have to do to reserve your spot on the bracket, the 32 teams, is shoot me an email, kevin@kkhasissues.com. And God bless you for listening to the podcast and supporting it and supporting our sponsors. I can't thank you enough. This is our way of getting together, and let's have some fun. COVID is over. Football's here. Let's play cornhole. Kevin and Jessica are in. I've heard from a couple of patrons I mentioned on a patron podcast yesterday. We're doing this. So we probably have 6 or 8 teams already. We probably have room for about 25 more teams. So hit me up with the email, kevin@kkhasissues.com, and we will play combat cornhole on October 6th in the Northland. All right, on to the news of the day. And I read a really great story at Breitbart. They have run the numbers from a group that has done a lot of research about immigration. You know, we're kind of numb to looking at these people jumping over the border, swimming across the river. We know 2 million people are coming in, and we know there's no stopping this until Joe Biden is gone. There simply is no stopping it. It is fundamentally changing America. It's fundamentally changing who and what we are in ways that we probably can't even perceive at this point. But I've never thought the sheer number of people coming across is all that meaningful, because we don't know how many will become citizens. We don't know how many will assimilate. We don't know how many that if the jobs dry up will go home. There's a lot of things here that are transitory, unlike inflation, which is not transitory. There's a lot of things here that are transitory, but a new study out has put this all into perspective about the historic times that we live in and the fundamental changing of America. And it is a graph that is reflective of America during peace and America during war. During World War I and World War II, and in the years after, where our culture, for a good 30 years after World War II, we were a society that protected our border. We had traditional American values that were reflected in people's beliefs that the world is a bad place compared to America, and we need to be great, and we need to watch who's coming in and what we're doing with our country. We want to remain great. We want to remain traditional, great America, as the Constitution calls for. That is faded. World War II is so far in the rearview mirror now that most people alive today don't remember it or don't know about it. They've read it in a history book, and it doesn't mean anything to them. There is no threat globally. People don't feel it. They hear about China or Russia, but Americans don't feel it. They don't feel any threat. They don't feel any true respect for what America has been and the greatness she has provided for the world, the beacon that this has been. We've lost that. It's reflected in immigration numbers. We see it in the late 1800s and early 1900s before World War I that America was bringing all kinds of people in. I'm not a historian. I could be wrong. I think the largest immigrant group over that time is that when my ancestors came was the late 1800s. There's no question about that. They're of German descent, but it was a huge number of people were coming from Europe at that time. And I believe there became a large number of Irish people for the first time started coming. I think the Irish came a little bit later. Does that sound right? Does that make sense? We had the English come, and then maybe Germans and Irish were a little later than that. I'm not sure. We know who all these people were and when they came. They came in the late 1800s and early 1910s. Every single one of them that came here got off a ship, went through a building, registered, gave their names, maybe changed their names, but became citizens and learned the language, regardless of where they came from. My ancestors came from Germany and didn't speak English. They all learned English and assimilated to this way of life. We did this forever in the United States since our founding. Better word, we did this. We assimilated. We wanted to be part of this culture. We wanted to learn this language. We wanted to follow the Constitution, and we wanted the freedoms and the democracy in this republic that existed. That's now gone. In 1910 and 1890, we set a record for immigration. 14.7% of all the population in this land were foreign born. 14.7%. To give an example, after World War II, it just plummeted. The foreign-born population just kept going down and down and down. We closed our borders. We said, look, this is serious stuff. We could have World War III. We just dropped a nuclear bomb. The world is not a safe place. We're trying to put Europe back together. We got very serious. And 20, 25 years after World War II, we had our lowest number ever. 4.7% of the population in the United States was foreign-born. Since 1970, we have quintupled. Since Ronald Reagan was president, we have tripled. We are back to 14.3% of foreign-born population in this country. Again, the all-time high was 14.7% in 1910 and 1890. This year, 2022, 14.3% or 47 million people in the United States. Now, these are citizens and non-citizens. This is the population. This is the people that are here within our borders. 47 million of us were not born here. That is no way to sustain a traditional society. It is impossible. Most of these people do not speak the language. Most of these people would like to stay here permanently, but don't really have their eyes set on that. Assimilation is very difficult because there is not a certain path to citizenship for them. A certain path would be go through, fill out your papers. We go through a process. When you can speak the language fluently, you know, when you have paid taxes, have a job and are paying taxes and can pass the test and understand what the Constitution is and know what democracy is and understand our country's history and assimilate in some way, whatever we define that to be, you can become a citizen. We're not doing that. We're just allowing people in. We have 47 million people that are foreign-born in the United States, and that is 14.3% of our population. And it is quite obvious that during times of peace, which we've had, relatively speaking, we've had conflicts, right? We've had things, right? Relatively speaking, the giant threat to America has not really existed since World War II. The Cold War, we sort of thought, well, the Soviets could lob a nuke at us. We were scared, but we weren't scared like World War II. The threat in World War II is that the Germans and the Japanese take over the entire world and they set up a government here and overthrow ours and fundamentally change everything that we are. That's the threat today. The threat now is more cyber, it's more power grid, it's more food supply from the Chinese or whatever. But make no mistake about it, we are very lucky that the Chinese really are only concerned about one thing. And that is being serious about protecting their own culture for what it has always been and what it will always be. They're mostly interested in that, not interested in exporting the Chinese culture to the United States. That's important. So that threat is different. Hitler wanted to take over the world. We knew that. So this is different. But it still becomes much easier anytime China or Russia or anybody wants to do real harm here to the United States, whether it's through power grid, food supply, cybersecurity, Twitter, gentleman who worked for Twitter and security, Peter Zatko, was on Capitol Hill yesterday testifying in front of Congress. He said he was fired a week after he learned, as the head of security, that there was a Chinese spy working for Twitter, and he notified his bosses. And the response was, what does it matter if we have one? Actually, Zatko said, there's probably more here. And their response was, what does it matter if we have more if we have one? This would be essentially like a CIA agent infiltrating TikTok in China and working for them and pulling out all the information about the people that are on there. This is scary stuff. We have Chinese spies working at Twitter in California, in the United States. Okay? So there are real threats to this country and we are out of control. But it is staggering to know when you see these numbers, they are a record number coming across. I don't know how many staying or how many going. I don't know how they're going to get amnesty for all of them and give them votes. I really don't know how that's going to work out. I can't predict that. We better figure this out and we better slow it down, because if we continue to grow and if this 14.3% sets a record and we get to 20% or 25%, that's enough to just basically lose our country. We no longer have a culture anymore. And this is what liberals want. They want to get rid of American culture. Let's not talk about Christianity. Let's not talk about the Constitution. Let's not talk about the things that American exceptionalism. Let's not talk about any of that. Let's talk about the American culture and the American way of life. What is it? How do you define it? For most people, it is freedom, liberty, the opportunity to live and work in whatever place and field that you desire. It's owning a home. It's the great American dream. For most people, that is the great American culture. That's it. And you get to live your life in peace and live the way you want to live and be around like-minded people if you choose, or integrate with people that are completely different than you. It's a free country. That's the American dream. That's what American culture is. And what this is doing is breaking that down and saying there is no American culture. We're going to have a bilingual culture. We're going to speak English and Spanish. And then all of a sudden, we're going to teach it in all the schools. And we're going to integrate classes. We'll do part of the lessons in English, part of them in Spanish. It's coming. It's what they want. They want to break down this society and this culture. That's what they really want. More than anything else, it's a culture war. I think even more than the Constitution, it's a culture war. We want to change what we've been. It's based in Christianity. It's based in the nuclear family. It's based in you know, getting a job, living your dream, getting a home, raising your children, and hoping that their life is better than your life. That is the American culture. That is ingrained in millions and millions of us. That's really what they want to break down. They want to break down. That is an easier thing for them to break down than the Constitution, than a government overthrow. And boy, they are good at it. And they are doing it. I have nothing against these people coming in. I just want them to do what my ancestors did. I want them to come. I want them to work their ass off. I want them to not break the laws. I want them to learn to speak the language. I want to be Americans. I don't want them to want to be Colombians living in America, Mexicans living in America. That's no good for America. We want them to come here not to reap the benefits of America. We want them to come here to be Americans, to understand what that is, to learn what that is, and to be part of it. And we have a culture, and we need to protect her. There's a government watchdog agency that has reported the Small Business Administration really blew it during COVID. Shocking. Did you see the CDC yesterday announced 76,000 more COVID deaths were not COVID? They just keep doing this. Every couple months, another 75,000. Nah, they weren't really COVID. Not really. Might have been the flu. That COVID number is coming down, man. Our death toll is coming down and nobody's reporting it. Well, this, as we gave all this money away, the Heritage Foundation has learned, and their quote in their release is, the response to COVID was panicked, unquote, by the Small Business Administration, the SBA. The Small Business Administration apparently gave away $1.3 billion in COVID relief to people in other countries. In other words, if you lived in another country and you had a small business and you applied online or did whatever it is you did and were fraudulent and did whatever you had to do to get money, get a check sent to you by the government, the small business, they gave away $1.3 billion that went to people overseas. This was to help companies here in America, small businesses in America, and they were duped by millions of people, apparently, or thousands of people. Thousands of people got away with $1.3 billion from the Small Business Administration. It is remarkable how big and clunky and inefficient our federal government is. That's why, I mean, that's the number one reason that I buy into deep state or swamp or any term that you want to use. The government is too big to succeed. That's the bottom line. We always hear the term too big to fail. No, this government is too big to succeed. And they've got problems everywhere. I mean, everywhere with stuff like this happening. I think the first time you heard a couple weeks ago about a murder in Las Vegas about a journalist named Jeff Gehrman, who was 69 years old and worked for the Las Vegas Review-Journal and had been an investigative reporter investigating on politicians, crime, and casino corruption for over 30 years in Las Vegas, was stabbed and killed outside his home on his front porch. And I immediately came on this podcast. I think I've got a pretty good sense for these sort of things. When I saw this, I'm like, this is not going to be good. Like, there was no detail of anything other than this guy, what he did, and where he was found dead and how. I'm like, okay, he answered the door, and somebody stabbed him to death. All right, and I know what he does for a living, and I know who he covers, and this ain't good. And they very quickly, within a couple of days, they maybe knew right away what to do. They found surveillance video on a street a block or two away of Robert Tellis, dressed up in an orange suit with a big hat where you couldn't see him and all this other stuff. They went to his house. They brought him in. They took his clothes. They sent him home. They took a while to arrest him. Robert Tellis is a Democrat politician in Las Vegas who Jeff Gehrman had been writing stories about over corruption, ass grabbing, bullying, and an affair with a subordinate in his office in the Las Vegas City Hall. Well, it was so bad, this guy lost his election this summer, Tellis did, and his life was spiraling out of control because everybody in Las Vegas knew what kind of a bully and corrupt abuser he was, how he took advantage of subordinate women in his office, and what kind of a scumbag he was. So his life's kind of spiraling out of control. And he goes after the reporter that found all this out and reported these stories, and he killed him. They arrested him. This story advanced yesterday as Robert Tellis appeared in court in shackles. He's going away for life. And smirked and laughed as he was brought into the courtroom. And the only thing I ask about this, because you know the story, and we talked about it a couple weeks ago before they even knew who the perp was on this thing. The real story here is now the side story. It's a tragedy. This man lost his life. He was a great journalist. I would consider that man a brother. Anybody that shines light on corruption in government is doing God's work. I'm sorry. They are. We can make fun of the media all we want, but there are still great people. And when they do it on the local level like that, it can be impactful. And it was. And Jeff Germain lost his life. And that's a horrible thing. The side story here is, what if this were a Republican politician? What if this were a conservative that freaked out and were being affiliated or attached to the insurrectionists and the dangerous MAGA extremists? This is so typical, and these things are everywhere. And the crimes committed and the scumbags on the left are in much greater number than on the right. There's been a history of this for decades. This man's a piece of crap that did this. He lived a bad life, and now he's going to jail. And he killed. And I would like to know what kind of a national... This would be bigger than the Queen dying. This would be the story. Nancy Pelosi would be having news conferences. Chuck Schumer would be talking about it. Biden would be including this in speeches, that we have these... Even Republican politicians are in on this. They're all extreme. They're all dangerous. They killed a reporter out there doing his job. Oh, but it's not. This is a leftist. This is a Democrat. So we don't get it. Can anything come out of this positive? Well, not likely, because the media can't get behind it in a meaningful way and say the dangerous people in this country are on the left. But perhaps on a local level, this is a big story. I looked at several television stories from Las Vegas TV stations and the newspaper online. They are covering this story nonstop in Las Vegas. This is the biggest thing going on in the state of Nevada. There are very important governor and Senate races coming up in Nevada. This will likely have an impact in a positive way for the GOP. It probably will. It's one of the worst stories you could ever hear. KKHI is brought to you by Back 9 Development, online at back9development.com. TJ Vilkanskas is a custom home builder. They do complete room additions or additions to your home. They work with commercial properties. They're developing, well, they've developed two big condo buildings now on the Colbert Hills Golf Course in Manhattan. And there, as of a week ago, there were only six condos left. Solheim Condominiums at Grand Mere. You can check all the portfolio out and what TJ can do with you, including developing rental properties, duplexes, condominiums, apartments, back9development.com. That's back, the numeral 9, development.com. Buck Roofing and Construction, Ron Buck and his team are available 24/7. They're the best. They'll travel within a couple of hours of Kansas City, so if you live anywhere near the metro, Ron Buck is there for you. They do free roof inspections. All you got to do is call 913-384-2680 and get it inspected. Most times they show up and say, looks like you got 3 to 5 or 5 to 7 years left with your roof. Most times. That's normally what, call us then. Who does that? And sometimes there's a really quick repair. They got to pound something down, and that's what they did with my mom's house a few years ago. They turned a flashing thing around and he left and he didn't even charge her. Remarkable. 913-384-2680. You'll sleep well knowing Buck Roofing fixed the roof over your head. Amazing Garage Floors, proud sponsor of Red, White, and Bluma, September 24th in Stillwell. Jamie Bluma, the former Royal, hosts this every year. They've raised over $350,000 for military charities and service-oriented charities. And AmazingGarageFloors.net is a very proud sponsor of this event. John Hutchins is a great American patriot. He served his country with honor, and he is thrilled to be affiliated with Bluma and RedWhiteAndBluma.org. If you'd like to go, tickets are available online at RedWhiteAndBluma.org. It's at the Stonegate Motor Plaza on September 24th. That's in Stillwell. It's a lot of fun. Live music, food, drinks, all kinds of cool stuff, and a really great American patriot spirit to the entire event. RedWhiteAndBluma.org is the place to go, sponsored by AmazingGarageFloors.net. And, of course, Dr. Jeremy Fry, he sent me a text about the Broncos. Dr. Jeremy loved the Broncos melting down Monday night. He thought that was pretty cool. And I was right there with him. You heard the podcast on Tuesday. I'm right there with you, Doc. I'm right there with you, Jeremy, 100% with you. But I've also been around long enough to know week one is weird. Week one, like, it won't be this easy all year for the Chiefs, and it won't be that sloppy all year for the Broncos. I can promise you that. I can promise you that. In fact, this may be the only week out of 17 games where the Chiefs and Broncos look that different. Maybe. It may be. It is a one-week snapshot. But it is a great sign that the Broncos don't really know what they're doing, and it's a great sign that the Chiefs do. I've gotten off track. Dr. Jeremy Fry and Fry Orthodontics are the best. You want a great smile? Log on to fryorthodontics.com, where your smile is just the start. Oh, here we go. The elections are right around the corner. Maricopa County, Phoenix. Maricopa County is the entire city of Phoenix. Phoenix is different than here. It's I think somebody said population-wise, it's the largest county in America. It is all of Metro Phoenix. There are like 4 million people in Maricopa County. They have a law in Maricopa County. Now, you know that there's been a lot of controversy in Arizona about the 2020 elections. There's been lawsuits. There's been investigations. There's been findings. There's been all kinds of things going on within the machine in Maricopa County to try to ensure that in 22 and 24, they don't have the abnormalities that they had in Maricopa County in 2020. They've been working very hard toward this. They have a very good, very simple law in Maricopa County. And it says poll workers at election sites at all locations must be equally divided among Democrats and Republicans. Okay, you go to vote. There's 20 people working at the poll. The law is 10 have to be Republicans, 10 have to be Democrats. Doesn't matter if you're talking about the suburbs, urban core, it doesn't matter where you are. That's the law in Maricopa County. It sounds like a good, reasonable law to me. Until this week, when the Republican National Committee put out a press release demanding answers from Maricopa County officials, which are still largely run at the county level by Democrats, why they have 857 Democrat poll workers for this year's election and only 712 Republicans. In fact, the Republican National Committee found 11 vote centers in Maricopa County where no Republicans were slated to work the elections. So now it's not just, we got to figure out how they screwed us over last time. And now the Republican National Committee can't just figure, hey, where do we want to place our ads? How can we get people elected? We're right here in the middle of elections, and the Democrats are figuring out a way to have officials lose valuable time during the election season watchdogging these groups who are scamming. And that's cheating in Maricopa County. Before the elections have opened up, they're already cheating in Maricopa County. That cannot be denied. It cannot be argued. That is a fact. The law says these must be equal. If there are 11 locations with no Republicans, that has to be fixed. If there are 150 more Democrat poll workers than Republicans, that has to be fixed. And now here we are. We have to take all our valuable time on the right cleaning up this crap because we catch them cheating before they cheat. It is remarkable, this stuff. This was an epicenter of one of the dirtiest places in the 2020 election, Maricopa County. And it's a real battle there. Okay? It leans red, but people say it's purple. And a couple of Democrats got in important positions in the county, and they perpetrated this thing. That's what they did. All in the name of COVID. Phoenix was scared. We got all these illegals coming in. They're probably bringing in COVID. Everybody in Phoenix was scared. You're more scared when you're closer to the border. You just are. And so these people took advantage of it in 2020. Nobody debates that the Democrats took control of the election. Now here they are in advance trying to scam the election in broad daylight. And it took the Republican National Committee to point it out and figure it out. And I suppose they'll sort it out and get it right, but who knows? It's just a constant battle with these cheaters. It is one scam after another. Moving on to sports, brought to you by BeStock.net with tons of appliances and LG TVs, all brand new. They also have 50-inch sharp commercial displays for $300. They're great for menus at your restaurant, your gas station, your offices. They can run 24/7. They're not normal TVs. They are digital displays. Buy four or more of these and get free shipping. They have Apple everywhere. Tons of MacBooks, Apple accessories, AirPod Pros 160, AirPods regular with charging case, just $110. They've got it all. Apple at bstock.net. You can buy these things online, ship them anywhere in America, or visit their warehouse showroom, 14680 South Flaming Road in Olathe. The Finch Knife Company loves sports too. And if you're an outdoor sportsman, why wouldn't you keep a Finch knife in your pocket at all times? Here we go. They're releasing the new knife design right now. The Buffalo Tooth. All in homage to the great American bison, which once roamed the Kansas prairie and called it home. The Buffalo Tooth. Good stuff. Get it online at finchknifeco.com. These are beauties. I've told you my favorite is still the Cherry Bomb. I love the Cherry Bomb. Should see these knife collections. Even if you're not a pocket knife guy, these are great gifts. Great gifts. Dr. Jeremy bought a whole bunch for the kids at his camp. He sent me a picture of it. It's amazing. These are really, really great pocket knives. You're going to love them. Online at finchknifeco.com or visit a local retailer and ask for it by name. Do you have Finch pocket knives? Okay, a lot of times, basically, announcers of football games, baseball games, whatever, people like to complain about the announcer. I get it, especially on a national broadcast. Everybody likes their local announcers, but they don't like the national ones because they're not the local announcers. They're not cheering for your team. That's the reason why. But we can all agree there are different levels of quality of broadcaster. The great Vin Scully died this summer. Vin Scully was in a league of his own, calling baseball games. It's tremendous. I think most people would agree Al Michaels is the best sportscaster in America. When he's calling a game, it just sounds big. He's calling the Chiefs Chargers Thursday night for Amazon. He's moved on to Amazon. So his audience is going to shrink, but his payroll is going to get bigger. He's getting paid a pile of money to go to Amazon. But announcers matter. You get the D crew on the, even like NCAA tournament. You know, sometimes you can just draw the bad crew. And you're like, oh boy, this isn't very good. This isn't Jim Nantz. So everybody knows that. You don't think about it much, but you know it. Now think about it from a business perspective. And you saw what these people are making. And the people that moved, Joe Buck left Fox, went to ESPN. He's getting millions and millions of dollars. I mean, these are big paying jobs, $15 million a year to go call football games. It's ridiculous money. Insane money, these guys. And you say, how can it be worth it? How can it possibly be worth it to pay these announcers that kind of money? Well, the announcers, for example, many of your favorite players have probably retired, but the announcers are still there. And when you hear Jim Nantz calling the game, it gives you a good feeling. Jim Nantz called the Chiefs game. Al Michaels calling the next one. It's good stuff, right? It's not Greg Gumbel. You got the A crew here, man. Does it matter? Well, big announcer switch to Monday Night Football mattered tremendously. I watched the Manning cast last year because I couldn't stand Joe Tessitore and then the other guy that was on there, the guy that used to play cornerback. Terrible. Greasy wasn't as bad. The other guy was awful. Announcers matter. Monday Night Football has been on ESPN for years and years and years and years and years. 30 years? Many years. Monday night was the highest rated week one Monday Night Football game in ESPN history. By a long shot, 20 million viewers. Now, it's also on ABC. They put it across other platforms. And the Manning cast is on ESPN, too. So they put it all together. And some people love the Manning cast. The Manning cast was up 86% over its debut week last year. But it was about the same number it got toward the end of last year. That thing grew as the season went. The big difference here, Joe Buck and Troy Aikman. Yes, it was a good game. Yes, it was Russell Wilson going back to Seattle. But this ain't the Cowboys against the Steelers. It's the Broncos. You're talking about out west where the population, the Broncos are big in four or five states out there. They're a big regional team. Those states have no population. Seattle's kind of forgotten land up there in the Northwest. Yes, it was an interesting story and it was a close game and I enjoyed it thoroughly. But the reason people watched and stayed with it was a fine broadcast. This was one of those typical games last year that if you were listening to Joe Tessitore and all the crap that they were spewing out and how ridiculously bad and hard to listen to it was, you might have turned away for an hour and then come back to it or something. People turned this sucker on and watched it. You know, Sunday Night Football is reserved for the 25, 26 million people that watch every Sunday night. That's usually the big one. Monday night, Getting a combined $20 million is a massive win for ESPN, and Joe Buck and Troy Aikman made every nickel they got paid. I believe that was the difference. I really, truly do. And I think many of you are probably agreeing with me right now that watching Monday Night Football the last God only knows how long has been impossible. I used to ask Kevin Harlan, why don't you leave and go do the Monday Night Football thing? You do it on radio, why not be the TV guy for Monday Night Football? That would have fixed their problems. That's better than Joe Tessitore or some of the gimmicky things they've tried through the years. And he would always say the same thing. Kevin Harlan would say, I'm a loyal guy. I love CBS Sports. CBS and Turner have been great to me. They have been great to me. I have no complaints. And CBS Sports, I think for a lot of sportscasters, Jim Nance included, there are certainly others. Vern Lundquist was one of them. Many people are like, CBS is the gold standard. The way CBS treats its sports operation is the gold standard. And so Harlan never wanted to make that move. But wow, what a difference for Monday Night Football. There's a great story out that I'm going to write about on the Patreon posts this week for the patrons that we'll get to in further detail. It's at a website called heartlandernews.com. It's written by Jack Cashel here locally in Kansas City, and he's a conservative. And he has written that the Chiefs are the least diverse business in Kansas City, that they run around in the NFL and talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion, and the Chiefs are dreadful. And some of this reads to me as tongue-in-cheek, but I think it's kind of funny. I have always said sports is my favorite thing in America because it doesn't matter if you're black or white, young or old, male or female, gay or straight, any of these other things we label people with, it doesn't matter. You make the team and you play the sport based on merit. Are you good enough? We don't allow that in society anymore. So Cashel writes that the NFL has gone out on a limb and they're paying $200,000 to women to come in and work as offensive assistants now. They're requiring everyone do this. And he says it makes no sense at all equating women, females, to ethnic minorities, given that 39% of the coaching positions in the NFL are already held by African Americans, each of which had to earn their way to those positions. The NFL, he writes, has yet to learn the nuances of DEI language, as refined in the halls of academia. The curve-busting students of Asian origin have made the terms minority and people of color meaningless in America. So to advance their equity agenda, woke educators focus now on underrepresented minorities, not just minorities. Cashel writes, Asians need not apply. Similarly, in the NFL, curve-busting African Americans have made the term minority and people of color meaningless, because so many African-Americans have jobs. He's writing they shouldn't be considered minorities. He writes, the Chiefs make no effort at all to advance the underrepresented minorities. On the roster, there's not a single Asian, not a single Mexican-American, let alone a woman. There are currently only two players of Asian descent in the NFL, and each has a Caucasian father. Although Latinos make up 19% of the American population, they represent less than 1% of the players. In fields with life and death consequences, medicine, firefighting, flying airplanes, combat, all come to mind, institutions have had to bend their standards to accommodate the pressure from the DEI industry. Although no one has ever died from an incomplete pass or a missed extra point, the NFL, like all major professional sports, has been blessedly exempt from this madness. In this regard, the Chiefs are the one and only company in Kansas City that honors the 14th Amendment and the Civil Rights Act of 1964. They hire the best talent without regard to race, creed, color, or gender. If the numbers break out 71% black, roughly the league average, and 29% white, so be it. Nobody cares. If a player or coach fails to perform, he's gone. There will be no wringing of hands in HR, no bean counting to see whether the equity numbers have become unbalanced. Ironically, of course, Cashel writes, the same people who demand that the police department, the fire department, and the Board of Education relax standards to reflect the community, well, these people would throw 1,000 yellow flags if the Chiefs did the same. And they would be right to do so. That's correct. He's dead on. He's dead on. Sports is the last great business in American life. They get it right. It's all merit. And if we got 71% black players in the NFL, we have 71% black players in the NFL. Done dealio. KKHI is presented by CrossKitchensKC.com, family owned and operated. You know, the craftsmen that remodel these kitchens for you have been with Tim for years. He pays them a little bit more because he doesn't have a hiring problem. They stay with him. It's like a family. That's how they can do jobs in 2 weeks or less, typically. Cross Kitchens KC can transform your kitchen this fall and create memories for a lifetime for your family this holiday season. It'll be a lot of fun. You should have Tim out. Ask him about your project online at crosskitchenskc.com. And North Kansas City Dental, Dr. Bill Bush, is an award-winning dentist. He is the dentist of the Chiefs. He's the dentist of the Keatsmans. He should be the dentist for you. You get to choose your dentist. You do. Why don't you have your next regular six-month checkup to see Dr. Bush and see how it goes and see if it's a better experience for you, where you don't have to look at a sign that says, wear your mask while you wait in the lobby. None of that stuff. You know these folks. They're like us. Online at NKC Dental, offices in Northland and Westwood, Kansas. The Royals almost got no hit on Tuesday night. Bobby Witt Jr. broke up a no-hitter in the ninth inning. I thought it was going to happen. I mean, the Royals were really bad in this game. They've had some games this year where they're really bad. They were really bad in this game. They had bad at-bats. They drew some walks, but they had bad at-bats. They struck out on bad pitches. They were swinging at pitches out of the strike zone. The Royals have only been no-hit twice in team history. 1973, that was Nolan Ryan, and 2008 was John Lester at Fenway Park. Bobby Witt Jr. broke it up. He just murdered a ball, a double down into the corner that knocked in a run. The game was 6-0. The Royals weren't going to win. I don't understand the life of me the problem with baseball, that people in baseball don't understand they're in the entertainment business. Okay, because nobody looks at a combined no-hitter and thinks that's a real no-hitter. Joe Ryan is a young pitcher that had 10 strikeouts, 9 or 10 strikeouts, against the Royals in 7 innings. He's thrown 106 pitches. He's 6 outs away from a no-hitter, and they pull him out of the game. They bring a reliever in. And I don't know, Rocco Baldelli is the manager for the Twins. I don't know how you can do that. I understand you protect your young pitcher. You don't want to get an arm injury, whatever. Oh, you think Max Scherzer would have come out of a game? You think Roger Clemens would have come out of a game? I don't think the Royals would have pulled Brady Singer in that spot. I don't get it. I don't get it at all. I don't care if he's just back from injury. I don't care what his circumstance is. You go back out there, and we'll have a guy ready to go in the bullpen. The second you give up a hit, you're out of the game. We're up comfortably. It's not a 1-0 game. It has nothing to do with winning the game. There's no impact on winning the game. I felt terrible for the kid that his manager pulled him out. Reliever came in. They were trying to only use one. So he goes through hitless in the eighth and then gets to the ninth, and his pitch count for a reliever goes up to 30-some pitches. By the time he's walked a couple batters, Bobby Witt comes up. That dude's exhausted, and Witt just makes him pay. It's a shame. I didn't want the Royals to get no hit, but I feel bad for Joe Ryan. That's pathetic. I'm sorry. There really is no great reason to allow somebody to pitch 7 innings and say, that's it, you've got a no-hitter. They forget they're in the entertainment business. And the Twins aren't going to make the playoffs, I don't think. They're 5.5 back of the wild card. Not just Twins fans. It would have been a cool national story. Hey, there was a no-hitter last night. Look at this young guy, Joe Ryan. He no-hit the Royals. Terrible. Oh, how about this? This is entertainment. Aaron Judge, oh my God, of the Yankees? Aaron Judge from the Yankees on Tuesday night hit his 56th home run. Then he hit his 57th home run. He has 20 games left. Roger Maris holds the American League record for 61 homers. Aaron Judge stays healthy. He's going to beat that. He's 4 homers in 20 games. I think he'll get that. Or 5 homers in 20 games. He had 2 last night. 56 and 57. Keep your eye on this and see where it goes. It's been so long since the Yankees have won anything meaningful, it's hard to hate them like I used to. And watching Aaron Judge play, it's really hard to hate him. Now, if they go out and win the whole thing this year, and Judge is the MVP and all that, we can start to hate them again. That's fine. You kind of have to want to hate the Dodgers. They're the dominant team in baseball right now, and I'm getting kind of sick of them. My God, the Cardinals have quietly had an unbelievable year. They're just running away with their division, and they're going to be a force in the postseason. We'll have Ryan Lefevre coming up in another next week or the week after. We'll recap the Royals season, then we'll have him on during the postseason as we get to the World Series and get his thoughts on all of that as well. We certainly look forward to it. Okay, don't forget to send me that email. Combat Cornhole is coming up October 6th. Combat Cornhole, it benefits friendsinserviceofheroes.org. We would be honored to have you play cornhole with us or just come out and have fun. Just come out that evening and have fun. October 6th at the Sandbox Power Play, which is 509 Northwest Berry Road. I'll be there around 4. The cornhole will start probably somewhere around 5, but it's as you arrive and it's your team is there, we're ready for you to play, we'll play. We're not going to set times for everybody to play. We'll figure it out. We're going to make a big bracket, 32 teams of 2, 64 total players. Everybody pays $10. That's $640 for charity. That's a good start. Other people can donate more if they like. We're going to have amazing prizes. The winning team is going to win beer fridges for your garage. How good is that? You're playing cornhole during football season at a sand volleyball place, and if you win, you win a beer fridge for your garage. Where do you get, what podcast does that? Is Joe Rogan doing that? Joe Rogan's not doing that. Come on, what podcast does that? Win that fridge. All you have to do is send me an email and say you're playing. How many teams you want? If you want 2 teams, you got 4 guys, whatever. Play with your wife, bring your child, bring your grandchild. Children are welcome. This is a fun place. Anybody can play cornhole. You could have 2 12-year-olds on a team. I don't care. Let's do it. All right, so shoot me the email. Kevin at KK Has Issues is the email address. And you can get signed up for Combat Cornhole on October 6th with Kevin Keatsman as Issues.
Thanks for listening to Kevin Keatsman Has Issues, presented by Roberts Robinson Chevrolet Buick GMC. To get exclusive patrons-only podcasts, receive a weekly newsletter, and attend in-person patrons-only parties, visit kkhasissues.com and become a patron today. This has been a production of Crooked Tail Media Incorporated.